Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Brett Stevens is the winner of the 2013 Pulitzer Prize for Commentary and is the foreign affairs columnist and deputy editorial page editor of the Wall Street Journal. His new book is America in Retreat, The New Isolationism and the Coming Global Disorder. In the face of economic troubles at home, Americans have been weary of acting as the world's policeman. Troops are coming home. In some cases, certain military spending is being cut and surveillance programs are being exposed and often curtailed. Stevens makes the case that there is a profound connection between the new global disorder and the America's diminishing international footprint. Again, his new book is America in Retreat, and we welcome Brett Stevens to the roundtable this morning. Brett, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Very nice to have you aboard. What brought you to this line of thinking, to this discussion, to the point of wanting to flesh it out into a form of a book?
Well, a couple of years ago, I started thinking about this theme because it seemed to me that we were looking at a world of systemic disorder in all kinds of corners. You had a Europe that was stumbling from one recession to the next, and real questions about the viability of the euro as a currency and even maybe the European Union as a political union. You had the unraveling of the Arab Spring and one country after another, either seeming to come under the sway of Islamist political parties like the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, or just simply coming apart at the seams as Yemen did and as we now see Syria and Iraq and Libya doing. You had in China a tremendous amount of aggressiveness, particularly in places like South China Sea, which are highly contested waters with a real potential for conflict and even accidental conflict. And above that, you had an American presidency that was calling for nation building at home, that was telling Americans that the tide of war is receding, that Al-Qaeda was on a path to defeat, and that it was time to really tend to our domestic troubles and discontents and ambitions and let the rest of the world take care of itself. And that seemed to me to be a very worrisome combination, just because the experience of the last century is that the world doesn't take care of itself, and especially doesn't take care of itself when the kind of leading liberal democracies turn inward and focus on their own problems. Power vacuums tend to get filled. And so as I was writing this, you saw the rise of ISIS in eastern Syria. You saw Russia becoming a very aggressive state, the Chinese continuing to encroach on contested territories against Japan, against some of their other neighbors. And so it seemed that there was just a connection between American foreign policy repeating some of the mistakes of the 1920s and 30s, and a world where disorders seem to be cropping up in very unexpected places.
Is it a natural reaction to retreat in some way, especially when you are fighting a war that's cause and very mission was in question and was perhaps flawed in its very design, meaning you get us into a problem and how do you get out? But also that a retreat is somewhat natural, even in the 20s and 30s, after you have a large world war, that you say, okay, so you take time to cool back and say, what have we learned from that experience?
Yeah, that's the point is very well taken. It was entirely understandable that Americans felt they had been burned by these endless wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, where, as the British saying has it, the game wasn't worth the candle. You had then, on top of that, the Great Recession of 2008, the financial panic. I mean, I get it. I understand why Americans thought, you know what, we have larger problems at home, and it was time for a kind of a come-home America strategy. It's understandable, but the consequences are also unfortunately predictable, because there is, for better or worse, there aren't really viable alternatives to American power in this world today. It would be nice if the UN could stand up and be a reliable guarantor of global order, but it isn't, and it isn't in a sense by its very structure. When you have Russia backing Bashar Assad, it's very hard to see how you get the UN to get someone like Assad to go. It would be great if our regional allies stepped up to their responsibilities, and every now and again they do, as the French did in Mali last year, but for the most part they don't. So you're left really then with this conundrum. Well, if it's not us, then it's kind of a fingers-crossed sort of world. That's not a very good foreign policy, because you don't want to face, you don't want to find yourself as a country reacting to ever-growing and more dynamic forms of disorder. I mean, ISIS is now 10 times the problem that it was a year ago, and of course, ISIS didn't even exist 2 years ago. Why? Because we created a power vacuum in eastern Syria and northern Iraq. We face an emboldened Russia because we didn't impose consequences on their seizure of the Crimea very, very early on. So taking time and taking stock is all very well and good, but you have to move at the same pace that the rest of the world is moving.
And your point, one of the larger points in the book, is that our adversaries spy opportunity. So if the opportunity is there, and we have, for want of a better term, if we have retreated in one way, shape, or form, that they are going to capitalize on that.
Well, that's exactly it, and that's what's so worrisome. I mean, what we've learned from someone like Putin is that he acts quickly. It wasn't long after the seizure of Crimea, which the international community seemed to be almost in a hurry to put behind it, that he started moving in eastern Ukraine. Now, you know, especially after that Malaysian jetliner was shot down, there's a sense of greater seriousness, but we're still not doing anything particularly serious to reassure the Ukrainians or to help the Ukrainians deter another incursion in, say, Odessa or somewhere else in their territory. And we're not doing a lot, by the way, to reassure NATO allies like the Baltic states or Poland that we're seriously committed to their defense. What would the United States do realistically? I'm asking you and your listeners, if tomorrow Russia were to seize Estonia, which is a member of the EU and of NATO, probably not a lot. And that breaks, an action like that would break the back of NATO. So that would fulfill, I think, one of Vladimir Putin's core ambitions in his attempt to reconstitute something like a new czarist empire. And I don't think we want to live in that kind of world.
In your world, what is the opposite of America in retreat? Are we always on guard?
Well, look, we have to be mindful of two permanent temptations in American foreign policy. One is the temptation to overcommit, to try to be the world's priest, to try to be a redeemer nation, to try to bring the American way of liberal democracy to all kinds of corners of the world where it doesn't necessarily take root very easily. And the other temptation is the temptation to retreat, to go into a kind of isolationist mode similar to what we had in the 1920s and 30s. And so the reason I've written this book is to suggest a middle course for the United States, which emphasizes the importance of American presence, the importance of American guarantees, the importance of American credibility for the sake of maintaining order rather than reacting to disorder. So people talk about, you know, not wanting America to be the world's policeman. But when you think about it, what a policeman really should do with most of his time is to stand on a corner and reassure good citizens, law-abiding citizens, that they can go about their business in a normal way, and warn people who might be up to no good that they should be careful. That's the role of a cop, is not just to draw his gun, you know, as often as possible. That's not how you judge a policeman's performance. It's by how rarely he draws his gun. But that depends on his presence and his credibility. And I think that's a role for the United States also.
So when we say, and it's so often used as a phrase, much to my chagrin, but boots on the ground, your feeling about how that fits into the course of action that you're recommending?
Well, what we don't want is to get in the business of endless occupations. I mean, boots on the ground should not be totemic in the sense that if boots on the ground allow us to conduct, say, a necessary military operation efficiently so that we can get the boots off the ground and not have this kind of slow ratcheting up that we now see happening in Iraq in the fight against ISIS. I'm not against boots on the ground as a kind of a theological matter. What I really think is that American power ought to be deployed more with a view towards, you know, what used to be called police actions. Think of getting rid of Manuel Noriega in Panama, for example, 25 years ago. And it should not be about long-term occupations attempting to heal crippled societies, because that is a recipe for a great deal of loss of life, a great deal of foreign policy frustration, and a kind of ricochet effect where Americans look at that and say, hey, you know, let's not do that ever again, and end up drawing opposite policy conclusions. How do you sustain a middle way for American foreign policy that understands what its priorities are, understands that sometimes, yes, you do need to use force, but above all, you need to maintain order by reassuring your allies that your guarantees are credible and by warning your adversaries that your guarantees are credible.
There are many on the left who say that we are now paying the price for a previous administration's work. How do you believe that in 2 years, 3 years, a new administration will be paying the price for our current isolationism, as you refer to it?
Well, look, you know, there's a great episode of Seinfeld where the George character realizes that, well, everything he used to do was wrong, so he's just going to do the opposite. I sometimes look at the Obama administration, I feel like they're like George Costanza, just do the opposite type of foreign policy. Bush was X, Y, and Z, so we're going to be A, B, and C. Well, that's not, I think, the right way to go about it. I fear that in a few years, what people will say about the Obama administration was that its foreign policy was too biased towards inaction, too reactive, that it was often, sorry for the cliche, a day late and a dollar short. They're going to look for some other form of foreign policy that doesn't fall prey to the utopianism of the Bush years, but at the same time doesn't have the same kind of extreme skepticism about the utilities of American power that Obama, at least so far, has shown. So they're going to look for some middle way, and I've written this book in large part for that next president, Democrat or Republican, who understands that don't do stupid stuff, to quote perhaps a presidential contender, is not a strategy for a great power. You need something else. And I think that the idea of America as a world policeman preventing us from slipping into a broken windows world is the right strategy. That's the purpose of the book.
Brett Stevens is the winner of the 2013 Pulitzer Prize for commentary. He is the foreign affairs columnist and deputy editorial page editor of the Wall Street Journal. His new book is America in Retreat, The New Isolationism and the Coming Global Disorder. The book is published by Sentinel. Brett Stevens, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.